Now it's moving. Now we're testing again to be sure this is playing. Back up again. The following is an interview with Jack Stiles by Dixie Hibbs for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The name of our project is the Prohibition and its Effects on Nelson County. The interview was conducted outside of Bardstown, Kentucky at on the Harrison Fork Road on July the 31st. All right. Would you like to give me your name and when you were born, Jack?
You want to call it Jack?
Well, all right, or your full name, whatever you want to call yourself.
That's just Jack Stiles.
Uh-huh. When were you born?
1914, January 22nd.
1914. Was your family, what business was your family in during Prohibition?
During Prohibition?
Uh-huh.
Well, my father was more of a buying and selling farms or kind of an entrepreneur. He already had made his money selling the whiskey out of the distillery at Clear Springs, which was originally Jim Beam Distillery. And then he went into different things. Bankrolled people in different things like Stiles and Guthrie's outdoor painting, sign painting company out of Lexington. And my mother's brother, he put her in the furniture business in Maysville, and he bought farms, and he bought real estate in town. Had the Louisville store and the drugstore, and the original pool room, I don't know what's there now, and the jewelry store.
Well, Prohibition was the period from 1920 to 1933. And you mentioned your father selling whiskey out of the Clear Springs Distillery. Did he own that distillery at the time?
No, Jim Beam owned the distillery.
Owned the distillery.
And Prohibition came in. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Beam thought that the government was going to confiscate all the whiskey in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my daddy didn't think so. So he borrowed $10,000 at the bank and bought the whiskey from Mr. Beam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a few months later, or maybe a year, I don't know exactly, but he sold it for $400,000 to Gern, Gross, and Schwartzoff out of Chicago, who built the Bernheim Distillery in Louisville. And he kept the property. He sold the whiskey, but he kept the land, which was later the Bardstown Distillery after Prohibition was over. And he kept the land, we owned the land. But he just sold the whiskey. And the warehouses just stayed there in the cave.
If you were born in 1914, then you were about 7 years old or so, then when Prohibition really went into effect. But do you remember hearing family talk about it or hearing about any distilleries closing or anything like that when you were younger?
No, I can just remember what my daddy told me.
Mm-hmm.
Later on. And I do remember some Prohibition because I remember the Prohibition officer that used to catch them going out of Bardstown, Jim Wakefield. He was a Prohibition officer. And he would tell them that he would let the cars go through. Most of them went to Louisville. He would let them go through and they'd pay him so much money. But then he would stop them after that. I never will forget that.
How did they, anybody try to retaliate against him for doing that, or he just got away with it?
Well, he never did operate any of it.
Oh. Okay.
He never drove anything. He just bankrolled it, just like Charlie Lawrence. Like Charlie Lawrence, he had his son, my brother, Roy Lee Lawrence, driving for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ogden Stiles drove for Daddy a lot. But practically everybody from New Haven, New Hope, were selling the whiskey.
Well, you said they're selling it. Where were they getting it?
Well, they were getting it from Moonshine still.
Ah, okay. So
and then they would sell it to people in Louisville who would then sell it under the counter to bars or liquor or near dance halls or whatever. Like in Bardstown, the two big bootleggers in Bardstown were two black men named Charles Henry Hammond and Gene Smith. And when you go to dancing bar, the town where you wanted whiskey, you say, well, somebody go down to Charles Henry's and get a pint.
Get a pint.
And he ran a charge account with some people, Chicken Smith especially. He'd always go down and have a charge account, and he'd get a pint of whiskey. It cost around $2 for about a pint. And Gene Smith was another. That was the only two bootleggers that sold it in town that I really knew about. But there were others, of course.
Did you ever hear people talk about whether the moonshining was acceptable or what was people's attitude about moonshining?
Well, moonshining in Bardstown very acceptable. Yeah. Then, because everybody would have their own, everybody would go to dancing and bring their bottle mm-hmm. and sit it right on top of the table, which you couldn't do hardly in Louisville, but you could in Bardstown. Mm-hmm. It more or less was practically legal as far as they were concerned. Since they had so many stewards, nobody paid any attention to it. Nobody was ever bothered for it. You could sit right on the table in the sweet shop or Tom Pig's or anywhere.
The situation you were mentioning about selling it in Louisville and so forth, was there contacts that Louisville people or out-of-town people who would contact local people to have them run the whiskey to them or?
Well,
any kind of an organization?
It was no organization. You'd know somebody, a relative of somebody even in Louisville, and he would sell it and get his commission. I had one man, Gene Dawson, lived there in the west end of Louisville, either Hale Avenue, I believe it was. And they would deliver the whiskey to him and he would store it in his barn in the back. And then he would deliver it to whoever was coming after. That's the way they did it. And then they'd store it. In fact, my daddy stored some whiskey. I don't know whether you want to hear it or not, but he stored a lot of whiskey in Burr Croon's warehouse, barn, mm-hmm. when he lived out the old Muir place, mm-hmm. and he was a distributor for, I believe, Gulf Oil. Mm-hmm. So he stored the whiskey up there for my daddy, and of course he was going to get so much for doing it. But he sold the whiskey and kept the money.
Okay, that sounded like a hijack, huh?
So they never got along.
No, I guess not.
That was the little Harry Sigler's granddad, the one he got his money from. Now I'm old.
Yeah. Who were you, the prominent people in Bardstown during Prohibition? I mean, who were the ones who had control or money or influence? You know, I say prominent.
I don't know about who had the control of Prohibition. I don't think anybody had control of Prohibition. But my father, Lewis Guthrie,
ones
that had money, you mean?
We are the people, any of the government officials, the county officials, the people that you went to get things done, kind of thing. You know.
Well, they didn't have to go to everybody to get anything done.
Yeah.
I mean, they never bothered. I think Judge Will Fulton, who later was on the circuit court or some appeal, he was a judge. Old man Freeman Carruthers' daddy was the chief of police, chief, was a judge.
Yeah.
In Bardstown, on the main street there by the firehouse.
Yeah.
Heavy Tongue was the chief of police.
Okay.
And then they had a night cop named Floyd Burby, and that's the only two cops they had. And nobody bothered them. They didn't pay any attention to it. And nobody knew anything when it was going out or how much was sold. Or I don't even know.
Yeah.
I just know that everybody in the town that was able that had enough money bootleg. Anybody who did it, they had the money to buy the whiskey.
Yeah.
But most of them were broke.
Yeah.
After Prohibition, most everybody went broke.
Went broke. Well, that was
the Samuels went broke and the Beams were broke.
Yeah. Because they were stuck with all that whiskey in the warehouses, no way to get rid of it.
They had all that whiskey in the warehouses and they thought the government was going to confiscate it.
Huh.
See, but the government didn't confiscate it. They allowed it to be sold. So it could be put out for medicinal purposes.
Okay.
And you had to have a prescription from a doctor to get it. You'd buy it a pint. Usually you buy, most Irish always T.W. Samuels, prescription whiskey.
Hmm.
And you'd go to a doctor and from a distance, wherever you get it. Of course, if you knew an illegal doctor or one that didn't have too much scruples about him, you could get all the scriptions you want.
Yeah.
Like Jody Tharp knew a fellow, doctor in Louisville, he could get all he wanted. But as far as any of the doctors in Bardstown, I don't know about any of those. Because I just ran with Jody and he could get all he wanted. This doctor, Shawnee was his name. And I don't know where he was in the kin, the old man John Shawnee, who was Jody's grandfather. Of course, Jody was adopted by them.
So sometimes the doctors were strict in giving prescriptions, sometimes they weren't.
As far as I know,
yeah.
I imagine some people that had money could probably get some, like anything else. But as far as some ordinary person going in there for a trip, and he had to have proof from somebody that he was using it for this purpose. And then he'd get a pint, and that's it.
Did the people who were wheeling and dealing,
and it sold for $5 a pint.
$5
I remember.
$5 a pint medicinal?
Prescription.
Prescription.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's...
To get it.
That was more expensive than the moonshine.
Yeah. But that was real whiskey
that was
made in the distillery.
Legal whiskey.
Yeah, it was good whiskey.
Yeah.
Aged whiskey.
Aged, okay.
The moonshine whiskey was anywhere from 30 days to a year or less. And they colored it.
I was going to ask that. Was it clear or was it colored?
It was all white when it's made, like all whiskey.
Yeah.
But they would color it.
What did they use to color it with?
I don't know what they colored with. They could put some charcoal in there.
Yeah.
Because that's what curl does in the legal.
Yeah.
I think they put charcoal in. Or they'd put anything in it.
Yeah.
In those days, they'd sell anything. I have bought whiskey in Bloomfield. It was almost purple one night.
Okay.
With Freeman's brother, Bill.
Bill, okay. Did you know anybody that died or got sick from drinking some of this raw whiskey or anything like that? Did that ever happen?
A lot of them did, not that I know of, except my cousin Ogden, who drank heavily, had a stroke. And everybody said it was from drinking moonshine whiskey. I wouldn't know where it did or not, and nobody's ever proved it.
Yeah.
But he got hold of it. His whole left side got paralyzed, and he drank constantly and stayed drunk. Of course, he quit in later life. He quit after he was paralyzed.
Yeah.
But they used to say you'd get the Jake leg. That's what they called it, Jake leg. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when you get paralyzed from drinking some moonshine whiskey.
Huh.
If you got off some bad.
Yeah. You wouldn't know it was bad until after you drank it, right?
No, you wouldn't know it, no. You wouldn't know anything about it. There's plenty of it. Plenty of it happened in the United States in big cities. But they got it, but Bardstown being so small, it was kind of rare to have somebody have a stroke there from drinking. And they usually kept pretty better moonshine whiskey in Bardstown than did in these other, like Louisville, places like that.
Why do you think that was so?
Well, because they knew where to get it.
Okay.
And knew who was storing it, and knew what kind of care they were taking of it.
Yeah.
But people in Louisville or these big cities would just put anything in it. They'd make gin in the bathtub.
All that liquor, huh? Mm. Did you mentioned about the law not bothering anybody? And but I know we have cases where lots of people were taken to court for moonshining or bootlegging different things. But
that was a little later on.
Okay.
That was a little later on.
Okay.
In fact, there's been quite a few that went to penitentiary. They'd go for about a year. That's about the length of time they'd get. But they'd only go if they were caught the third or fourth time.
Oh, okay. Wasn't the first time thing, huh?
No. The J.B. Mauser in New Haven, I think, was in the pen four or five times. He went at least four times to penitentiary for selling whiskey. He sold it out of his house.
Okay.
He was, that was J.B.'s junior, not the old man.
Mm-hmm.
The old man, of course, I imagine bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
J.B.'s the one that lives in Elizabethtown now.
Take some of this home with you.
Mm. Plenty of them. A lot of them went to penitentiary.
Yeah.
I mean, around New Hope, places like that. I didn't know any personally in Bardstown they went. There probably were some.
Mm-hmm.
Which they usually just put on probation. And if you were caught two or three times, they'd give you a year or a year and a day or something like that. And you was out in 5 or 6 months. And they'd be right back to doing it again. And they were mostly people now. that made the whiskey, not the ones that sold it.
Not the sellers.
They were the ones that had the stills out in the country.
Yeah.
And they would raid the stills and take in the man. But never did I know of anybody that sold a whiskey in their home was ever bothered at all. I mean, it was just open. You just go down there and knock on the door and get it, and you bring it, and it's all it. And you carry it right in the sweet shop gymnasium with it. And as I say, they only had two policemen. They could care less. Unless you got dead drunk, then they put you in jail.
Oh,
or if you got raised by a cane.
Yeah.
Which happened to me a few times.
Do you think they were... Were there many bankruptcies? You said something about them losing their money because the whiskey was tied up. But do you think there were many bankruptcies?
There's a lot of people. I don't know whether they took out bankruptcy or not, but a lot of people who didn't have any money.
Any money?
I mean, the Beams had none. I was told by a good source, my father and the grocery man that he owned the $5 bill at Stover and Smith grocery store and couldn't pay. And that was Mr. Beam, Jim Beam.
Yeah.
And T.W. Samuels didn't have any money. A lot of them lost their money, and a lot of them, that was during the Depression days.
Yeah.
Starting the Depression, almost everybody was short of money.
Yeah.
And the
people who were working at the distilleries when they closed down or during the 13 years there, the ones that would normally have been distillers and warehouse workers and things, what did they do, do you think?
Now, some of the old time distillers went on and came back after Prohibition went out and got jobs back at distilleries.
Mm.
I got it to one behind Nazareth, the Clear Springs Distillery.
Yeah.
A man named Craven was a streetcar conductor after Prohibition went in Louisville. And my father got him when he sold the distillery to the Bolivar Watch Company, who bought it in New York. They bought the distillery just for distillery only. They didn't buy the land, just the distillery. They wanted to make whiskey. And Daddy got this Mr. Craven to come out and be a distiller. And that's the man that taught me how to make whiskey in 1934. Still reopened in 1934. It was the first one in Nelson County to open.
Did it open as Clear Spring, or what did it open as?
It opened as the Bardstown Distillery.
Bardstown Distillery.
And I was that's where I learned how to make yeast and be a distiller. And then I went from there over to the old Shawhan Distillery that my daddy owned that land and sold it. He sold it to the Pendergrass outfit out of Kansas City.
Okay.
And he kept the rights to that, the slop cattle on that, and also on the Bardstown thing. That's where he made a lot of money. So he fed 1,500 head of cattle, he got the slop free.
Yeah.
It was in the contract because they wanted to get rid of the slop because they had nothing to do with it. And in those days, they weren't drying slop, at least not in the small stores.
Right.
And so we had to get rid of the slop, so he got it for nothing, and they'd pipe it to him, and he would sell it by the barrel and feed his cattle. But they kept the whiskey, but he still owned the land.
Right.
And mother sold it after he died, the property, to Jack Shields, I think, for $40,000. And he turns right around and sells it to the city of Bardstown, who got $100,000 for Bird Company. It's got a building out there. I never have seen this. I knew they bought it.
There, yeah. Okay, we've got wet and dry counties all over Kentucky. Of course, to the east of us, we've got Washington County that's dry, but we had Marion that was wet.
Yeah.
We all know, but at the time,
Springfield was wet at one time.
Was it? Okay.
Evidently, because I bought it at a whiskey store in Bardstown, and I bought it from a man that had two Bardstown. He had the model liquor store and the one up next door, Joe Hurst, had a whiskey store. And this fellow Camel from Springfield owned these two stores. Whiskey stores, and I bought the one at my next to old Farmer's Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Springfield, he had some whiskey stores.
Hmm.
But then it went dry, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's ever voted back wet or not.
I know we were trying to figure out if Nelson County, since we were so much in the business of making whiskey, what were the other counties, if you know, say Washington County didn't have a distillery, I don't think. Prohibition probably didn't affect them as badly as it did Nelson County, but I didn't know whether it was a market where you went over there
and sold it. Well, the market, I imagine, affected them.
Yeah.
And in order to get their whiskey, of course, they would come to Bardstown and get it. Or Springfield or Bloomfield, they'd come and get it. You could You could always go to Broomfield and find a bootlegger, but he'd usually get it from somebody in Forestdale. Or maybe somebody had it still around Broomfield. But over in Loretta's where they had most of it. Around Loretta and New Hope.
And back in the Knobs then?
Back in the Knobs. In fact, that's where I got this bad cut on my hand. We're going to one time with a fellow to try to help him out. When I was a stiller at Shawhain, he asked me to come out to his still and see what was wrong with his mash. It wasn't fermenting. And I went out there with him. It was Lowell Spaulding. In those days, the Spauldings ran a lot of cars through Lowell. My name was Jesse Spaulding. And on the way back, I stopped at that tavern out of Barstown, which is run, I think, now by, I think it's the girl's name.
Maxine Graham?
Maxine Graham. She didn't have it at the time. Mm-hmm. A young fellow had it at the time.
You're on the New Haven Road then,
basically. On the New Haven Road, yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Ansel Heitmill had it. He had it at one time, I know that. And then I got a little intoxicated, a real intoxicated, and it was during the war, and the soldiers were congregated out there, and I was having a problem with my first wife, and she was there. And we got in an argument, and someone put me out the door, one of the soldiers. I mean, I turned around to get back at it, and run my hand through the glass, went and cut my hand in the other. And they took me to burn New Haven. And old Dr. Green was over there, but he didn't sew the leader, so I can't bend that joint there or that one right there. So I had a big time.
Well,
that was my own experience going to a steel.
Yeah. Going over and trying to see why it wasn't fermenting, okay?
Yeah.
That's not something you can diagnose over the phone, or you got to see what's going on then, basically. You have to see what's going on when it's not fermenting.
Oh, yeah,
you can't just guess
you
at it,
see
huh?
Yeah, and how much they're heating it and how far down they're cooling it.
Yeah.
And how their yeast is working. The yeast is what makes all of it ferment.
Yeah.
If your yeast is not fermenting, you're not going to have any. You're not going to have any in the mash.
Mm-hmm. Were there any of the distilleries, you mentioned T.W. Samuels having medicinal whiskey, were any of them allowed to produce whiskey, or they just used the stores they already had?
They just used it. I think, and I'm almost sure, I know the distilleries didn't run.
Mm-hmm.
They just used all the bulk whiskey they had in their warehouses,
okay.
Which they had worlds of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'd send it to Chicago or somewhere, and they'd bottle it, and these doctors would put it out as prescription.
You talked about taking a bottle with you every time you went to social events.
If you had the money.
If you had the money,
if you didn't have the money and you're a friend of chicken or somebody that had the money, had the credit, you gave you'd go back in the restroom and take a drink.
Ah.
It didn't take very many drinks then. When you're 17 and 18, you'd be tight.
Yeah. When you're a young drinker, it doesn't take much, you say?
No.
Okay. Let me ask you.
And you drank it straight in those days with nothing. You didn't fool with any.
Any
once
mixes?
In a while, no mixes.
Okay.
No, and when you bought it by the gallon, you'd put it over your shoulder and drink it out of the gallon
like that.
And sometimes you'd have a Coke. If you did, you'd be five or six boys out on the road. You'd park on the side of the road. And everybody would take a sip out of the Coke. They'd be going to chase it there.
What proof is this whiskey we're talking about? We're talking about drinking out of a gallon.
Well, you hardly ever knew. You know it's 100 at least.
Yeah.
Because they'd run it out of those
barrels.
And they would cut it and they'd run it down like they do in the regular distillery. They'd make it whatever proof they wanted.
Okay.
Using the legal whiskey, you'd run it to about 102 or 4 and put it in the warehouse.
Yeah.
Of course, when it comes out, it's 160 or better.
Walmart,
but you have to cut it down with distilled water.
Yeah. Walmart,
and then you put it in the barrels, I think somewhere around 102, 103, if I remember right. And you let it stay in those barrels until you brought it out. And then you had to cut it to 100 if you put that bottom line on. And if it was bottom whiskey, Because that'd be 4 years old before the beaver.
Yeah, right.
But if you wasn't 4 years old, you didn't have to have the understanding.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Anything else we're talking about? You're talking about the people who didn't have any money. Did they borrow any money against the distilleries, or did they go into any contracts or anything like that? Do you remember?
Well, in the two cases of the Beam and the, Samuels, they couldn't borrow any because they sold it.
They sold it
to my daddy, the Clear Springs, behind Nazareth. They sold Jim Beam, sold that to him. So it was my daddy's whiskey, who he was gambling on being able not to be confiscated.
Yeah.
And had the land.
Yeah.
But the man bought the Gern Gross and Schwarzhoff, was a big rich man in Chicago, who, as I say, built Bernheim Distillery in Louisville. They bought the whiskey. And then in the case of the other one, Raven, saw you. The other one, he sold it to old man Tom Pendergrass. He was the one they put in the penitentiary for income tax evasion because they couldn't get anything else on him. He ran Kansas City. He ran the whole state of Kansas.
Tom
Pendergrass.
Doesn't sound very mafia sounding. He wasn't.
He wasn't mafia. He was a big politician.
Yeah.
And he ran the state about like J. Dan Tarver did in Kentucky, only not on as big a scale.
Yeah.
I mean, Pendergrass man on a big scale. Yeah. He owned all the concrete companies, and if you built a highway, he used his concrete.
Oh, okay.
And when whiskey came back in, he's the one that got the wholesale whiskey houses.
Oh.
And that's why he bought that distillery and used the whiskey to ship to Kansas City. And Fitzpatrick, that used to live in Bartersdown, ran these trucks, Shawhan trucks, to Kansas City. And took the whiskey to Kansas City and they put it in their wholesale line and sold it to different places. None of it hardly stayed in Bartersdown. No.
Mm.
Or any of them. Mm. Bartersdown, no. Except what you could go for. Probably didn't even get a pint or two or something. I mean, at the start it was, like I was a distiller at Shawhan, it was fairly easy to get a case of whiskey that was over. See, they'd have whiskey over at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't fill a barrel. And you could go up there and they'd bottle it and they'd have it in a half a case or something like that. And you could get it.
That's raw whiskey, really, wasn't it? I mean, it was
all the same whiskey that would ordinarily be put in the barrels. But it wasn't enough to put in the...
Right,
to fill enough a barrel. So they'd fill the bottles. They were bottling at the time.
Yeah.
It was already been aged in a cistern room to be bottled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the bottling room.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have some left in the vat.
Okay.
It wouldn't fill out a case, so they just bottle it up and keep it.
Yeah.
And I could go up there and get two or three bottles or a half a case, whatever. But it got tougher later on. The government stepped in, and they wouldn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they used to give the workers on the weekends, before they got off, they'd give them a quart of whiskey, something like that, take home. They even stopped that. The government.
Yeah. Government doesn't want you to sell it or give it away.
Yeah.
Do you think that the morals, what effect do you think prohibition and what people had to do during prohibition had on the morals of people?
Don't think there's any worse than they are now.
Well, okay.
I mean, they did the same thing then as they do now, and they do it more now.
Well, you said something about being acceptable, being the moonshiners being acceptable, or moonshining being acceptable. I didn't know whether...
Moonshining, I don't say the stills were acceptable.
Yeah.
The stills were raided by government men, marshals.
Yeah.
But they never had enough marshals to raid them all.
No.
They would raid two or three maybe in New Haven, Loretta, and they'd tear the still up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd move on, and they'd rebuild, or somewhere else, they'd locate another place. They didn't have enough manpower to control all of these things. But as far as the people that were selling it in the town, I never knew of anybody like John Henry or Keene Smith that was ever sent to penitentiary for selling. I could be wrong, but I don't remember that. And as far as bothering anybody that drank it, or had in their possession at a dance or something, that was nobody bought it. It was unheard of unless you got out of line, got in fights, or got drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just a normal thing in Bartersdown to drink at the dances or
mm-hmm.
and it's same, just like they do now, if they go with legal whiskey. It was the same thing. Nobody thought anything about it. In fact, some of the, like my father, now he had some whiskey from the distillery that was legal. Mm-hmm. That he kept. And he always told me, if you're going to have to drink, I'll give you half a pint. He always had a flask. I'll give you half a pint so you don't drink that rot gut and get paralyzed. Of course, I never would do that. I was ashamed to say, give me a half a pint, I'm going to dance. So I'd go out and buy, if I had the money, buy a pint of moonshine. If I didn't, I'd bum a drink off of somebody.
Well, let's see. What haven't we covered?
As far as anybody worrying about it, nobody worried about it in the town, but it was just an accepted thing. It was just like it was legal, really. So, man, they never did think much of prohibition. You may have had some hard Shell Baptists or some people that didn't like it, but as a rule, it was just as normal as legal fishing. So they'd known it all their
July 31st, 1988. We have just discussed various aspects about prohibition and trying to see what other odds and ends left over here. We were talking about before the distilleries were closed in 1920. Your father basically then was in the land business or the farming speculator kind of thing, yeah, more than distilling.
Yeah, he wasn't in the distilling business at all.
Until
he bought the steward from Jim Beam.
Right.
He was what you call a horse trader, more or less. I mean, he saw something he could buy and resell for profit he would.
So this was an opportunity then Prohibition gave him.
He was more or less a gambler on things. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where he lost a lot of money. He gambled on people, put up the money and never looked into it.
Right.
So he gambled that the government wasn't going to confiscate the money. I don't know that he knew that it was going to sell at such a high price or where high it was going to be done. Mm-hmm. But he borrowed the $10,000 and he went in with Lambert Willett. Now, Lambert just owned a very small percentage, around 10% or something. Mm-hmm. And another fellow that was a bookkeeper named Garfield Barnes.
Yes, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there were the three, but Daddy put up, I guess, owned probably 90% of it. Mm-hmm. And that's when they sold the whiskey to this Gringos and Swartzoff. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when whiskey came back in, Mr. Willett went in and built that distillery out there where he did.
Kept the label and everything, yeah.
And my daddy just stayed slapping the cattle. Mm-hmm. Of course, he died in 41, so but he never got it. He never was in the whiskey business after he sold his whiskey. And after Prohibition, he was in the cattle business and buying real estate in town and farms. I think in one time he had about 7 or 8 farms. Mother sold them after he died to put her money in stock, but she didn't know anything about farming and didn't want to fool with
them. We talk about, our different people have talked about the situation here in Bardstown, Nelson County, and they talked about some of the distilleries burning, or the warehouses burning. Have you ever heard any stories about that?
Yeah, they burnt, the only distillery I know of it burnt was the Walford Distillery.
Uh-huh. It was out on the Boston Road.
Right. And from what I hear, that was the only time my daddy ever got drunk in his life. They all went down, of course. They said the whiskey was running down the side of the road in the ditch, and it was on fire. And it, I think he drank some, and everybody in town was there. And that was the only distillery I ever knew of that was burnt. Now, who burnt it, or whether it was burnt intentionally, that I never knew.
Never knew about that.
Some people probably knew. I never did.
Yeah.
All I knew, I was pretty young then.
Yeah.
But I heard them tell me about the wall was still burning.
Right.
And my daddy told me it was the only time he ever got drunk. And that was the only time I ever saw him drunk.
Yeah.
But I imagine it was probably someone trying to steal it. A lot of the warehouses in those days were broken into. People stealing whiskey out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether the owners stole the whiskey or their own whiskey or not, I don't know. Some say that the owners stole their own whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. My dad never told me he did that.
Yeah.
But some people did break into warehouses. The warehouses were broken into quite a lot by people.
Yeah.
Other than the owners trying to steal the whiskey.
Right.
And the government finally put padlocks on the door with those seals they have to keep you out. But I don't know how much of that was done, but I do know that one fire. That's the only fire I know that burned out Walker's, but there may have been others. I know the Barkstown never burned, as far as I know, and the one at Shawhan, which was called the Old Lancaster Distillery, what it was called, Old Lancaster.
Right.
It was never burned as far as I know. They had been broken into, I don't know that.
You know, nowadays we see drug running and all this kind of thing. The people who had the fast cars, I mean, that were doing the bootlegging, I mean, could you tell a bootlegger by the type of car they were driving, or did people just know that, or did
well,
it make any difference?
Like a prohibition officer, he would know who in town had the money and who was operating or who was sending people through.
Yeah.
Like Jim Wakefield was the one that located here in Barkstown.
Hmm.
He'd been at our house many times. And he would tell you he'd let your cars go through, you get him so much money.
Hmm.
And then he'd turn right around and you'd be halfway there and he'd stop you again. And what could you do?
Yeah.
Nothing, you couldn't report
him.
And then sometimes he'd let it go through.
Yeah.
He was just kind of what you call a crooked marshal, what he really was.
Yeah.
Prohibition.
Yeah. I know your father and S.L. Guthrie were partners or friends?
They're great friends.
Great friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to go out there and stay the whole summer with them.
Yeah.
I had early time in Steery when Lewis was working for old man John Shawnee, who was Jody Tharp's uncle, or whatever you want him to be. I used to go out there and stay with them all the time, and they always went together to the races or anywhere. They were just like brothers practically, the Guthries. And in fact, the night they got robbed out there by the robbers, my dad and mother had just left. They'd been at the Queen Bridge, and they had just left the early times. And on their way home, when these six or seven robbers out of Louisville tied Mr. and Mrs. Guthrie up and looking for whiskey in their basement. And they brought one of them to Daddy's house. And they were forget to brought this one boy, nice looking man, it was one of them. The marshals brought him in from Louisville when they caught him and stopped by my daddy's house. And he was in, and they were forget to get, he was in chains. He was sitting there talking, they were bringing him back to put him in jail in Barstown for the trial.
Hmm.
And then they had a couple of them were brothers named Sleater.
Hmm.
And I think they called them all.
Hmm.
But I don't think they got anything from the Guthrie, whether they got any whiskey or not. I think
that.
But that's what they were out after.
Yeah.
And they tied them up, I know that.
Well, I just wondered how much, you know, we talked a little bit whether anybody from out of town came in and caused any problems like that. And I guess that would be an example.
That's about the only thing.
Yeah.
They thought they was gonna. They thought being by the house was by the steerage right there.
Yeah.
And I guess they figured they had some whiskey in the cellar, which some probably kept in their cellar from the steerage. I know my daddy had a vault when he was home around the corner. I never knew what was in it. He never showed it to him. Nobody knew what was in it.
Yeah.
Even my mother never did know. And whether there was anything in it or not, but after he died, there wasn't anything in there.
Nothing there.
So we always thought, well, it's probably some whiskey from the distillery stored in there.
Yeah.
But it evidently wasn't so.
What about the, something went through my mind you were talking there. Nancy McKay's on a tape about that robbery, too. She had, you know, some information on it. I forgot now what I was
going to ask. It happened probably around 11 or 12 o'clock at night. Mother and them had just left from Queen Bridge. They'd been out there Queen Bridge. And they hadn't even probably gotten home. When they were out there waiting for them to leave. They had a gate there, the rock wall.
Yeah.
And they, I guess, were waiting outside the rock wall.
Hmm.
And they went in and was going to rob them. And I don't know what they got or anything.
Yeah.
But I know they were pretty tough customers. The Sleeters were anyhow. This one, Vernon, they called him Vernon. They came into the house. He was a real nice talking, nice looking man. But they all got caught and sent to the penitentiary. But I think the Sleeters had been in trouble in Louisville before. Most of them were Louisville residents.
Right.
I don't worry him out of town, the state of Kentucky. Not. Maybe that Vern was, but I know the Sleeters were Louisville people.
Well, I think we've covered most everything there. We'll stop now, and if you think of something a little later, we'll put it on here. Well,